Radio. Raj Taylor and Michael and Abby, there's more people in Master Control than we know what to do with.
Yeah, it's crowded over here.
The shutdown of the government having some impact in unexpected places. Michael, share with the listeners what you shared with me earlier. I was surprised at this.
Yeah, the Defense Department has canceled intercollegiate sports at its three service academies during the government shutdown, the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, and the U.S. Military Academy are suspending their football and most other games. And in fact, actually, I was just looking up on the TV here on ESPN, the Air Force-Navy game has been canceled for Saturday. Nothing has been said about the Army-Boston College game yet.
But that seems to be in jeopardy based on the policy that you just ticked off there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So unexpected consequences of the shutdown. And are the political parties going to have some unexpected consequences of the action? We're going to get the show started, but then we're going to talk to Tom Clute. He's an author, a writer for Talking Points Memo. And a new poll, a Quinnipiac poll out this morning that gives us an idea of what might be on the horizon for the political parties. And we'll talk to him straight away. Ironic that the national anthem today is the combined academy choirs, and I suppose they're not singing anymore either. Joining me now is Tom Clute. He's a writer for Talking Points Memo, and he has some interesting information gleaned from a Quinnipiac poll that was released today on the Affordable Care Act. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Roger. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
You know, everybody is now pointing fingers at everybody else, and a lot of concern on both sides over who's going to be blamed for this. Republicans insist that they're just doing what the American people want, and yet that doesn't work with this Quinnipiac poll that was released today. What were your impressions from reading that poll?
Well, I mean, there really wasn't a lot in the poll that could be considered encouraging for Republicans. I think it undermines two of their central messages, which is that, their central message, which is that they've been upholding the wishes of the American people through their ongoing efforts to defund the new health care law. The poll showed 72% were opposed to shutting down the government to block the Affordable Care Act. 58% said they are opposed to Congress defunding the law in general. And as I said, you know, those two data points just really undermine what's been the central, most salient message from Republicans throughout this latest fiscal fight. That is that they're upholding the will of the American people and that the law is just so unpopular and it's been forced upon the public unnecessarily. And really, the poll showed that the law itself isn't all that unpopular either. Very polarizing, as you'd probably expect. Mm-hmm. 45% said they're in favor of it, while 47% are opposed. So, you know, not overwhelmingly unpopular. But I think that what those numbers tell you is that the public really isn't just placing a pox on both houses here. They recognize that there is one party that's been largely responsible for where we are.
Then did you see anything in the polling that would cause conservatives to behave the way they're behaving? If they're not supporting the will of the people, did you get any insight into what they think they are doing?
Well, you know, as I said, there weren't a lot of positives that Republicans can glean from this poll. I suppose, you know, it showed that voters are still basically evenly split when it comes to budget issues between who they trust more, congressional Republicans or President Obama. 43% said they trust Obama more, 42% said they trust Republicans more. So, and that's kind of always been the Republicans' bread and butter issue. So
sure.
I suppose I could say they have an opening there. But, you know, as I said, it just it was a really rotten poll for Republicans. There's just no way to spin it positively for them.
Talk to me about Quinnipiac. Do they, in your mind, have a reputation for doing accurate polling, not trying to skew the results for a political perspective?
Quinnipiac, it's a school here in the Northeast. They're an independent pollster. They aren't beholden to any ideology or any political party. And actually, most recently, they conducted extensive polling on the New York City mayoral race, and they absolutely nailed that with their final poll. Their final survey of that race came very close to the ultimate results of the Democratic primary there. So I think they're a very reputable pollster, and there's really no reason to suggest or believe that they're skewing their results.
Out of the people that are not happy with the Affordable Care Act, I have read that there are substantial numbers of people like me, who think we should have done a single payer system, and are unhappy with the Affordable Care Act, not because it's there, but because it didn't go far enough.
Right.
Was there anything in this poll that took a look at the breakdown of people who don't really care for the Affordable Care Act and why they don't care for it?
Well, I think you actually spoke to something that Democrats and liberals have long contended, as Republicans have pointed to these poll numbers showing that the health care law really isn't all that popular. What they've suggested is that the opposition also includes a number of individuals on the left, progressives, who are sort of disenchanted with the law in its final form. They would have liked something, as you said, closer to single payer rather than what they ultimately got, which is something that empowers the private insurance companies. So, you've heard a number of Democrats say that lately, as you know, the likes of Ted Cruz and other congressional Republicans have been bringing up the popularity of the bill. They've said, you know,
yeah,
that doesn't really provide a holistic picture. It probably includes some liberals. This Quinnipiac poll, as I said, it showed a pretty sharp divide in the popularity. 45% said they support it. 47% said they oppose it. And, you know, it cuts pretty evenly along partisan lines. 80% of Democrats said they support it. Only 11% said they're opposed. So, you know, I think that the jury is still out on the public's ultimate verdict of this law, if you will. I think that we're just going to have to wait and see. The exchanges just went live today,
mm-hmm.
And we're just going to see you know, how it comes to fruition exactly before we render, before the public renders a judgment, I would say. I think right now it's been, public opinion has been largely based on a lot of assumptions, probably a lot of misperceptions too.
Did you see anything in these data in this poll that would let us know if the shutdown lingers? Is that going to change who's at fault in people's minds? Or well, was look, this, I mean, really just a snapshot in time?
I mean, again, you know, that also remains to be seen. There was one very intriguing data point in the poll's generic congressional ballot. They asked respondents in next year's election for the House of Representatives if they could choose a generic Democrat or a generic Republican. 43% said generic Democrat, 34% said generic Republican. So that nine-point margin was actually the largest spread enjoyed by Democrats in Quinnipiac's polling of that question. So I think that if you're a Democratic operative, you look at a number like that and you say, you know, this is a potential wedge issue in next year's midterms. We can point to the Republicans and we say, you elect this party. They come to Washington and they burn the house down. And I think that you're probably going to be hearing a lot more about that in the next several months as we get closer to the midterms. I think this could very well be a salient issue in next year's campaigns.
Well, and this could be the budget ceiling may just throw gas on this fire.
Absolutely.
Because we've proven on a number of occasions that Republicans can shut the government down and the country survives.
Right.
The debt ceiling could be a whole different kind of problem.
Right. And, yeah, I think by almost any objective measure that carries far more catastrophic consequences than this. Although this shouldn't be dismissed either. You know, hundreds of thousands of federal workers will be furloughed without pay. So it's certainly a significant problem too, but you're exactly right. The debt ceiling, I think the larger, more frightening fiscal battle, if you will, I think that still looms.
I appreciate, before I let you go, one last question. You
sure.
Brought up the fact that the Obamacare exchanges opened today. Have you been keeping up with that? Have any problems been encountered? Do you have any insight into how that's going?
You know, actually, a colleague of mine, Dylan Scott, who is based down in Washington, D.C., he reported on some glitches that have surfaced with the government's wealth website today, healthcare.gov. It looks like it's pretty much a result of the servers just being choked. The website's been overwhelmed with traffic. So,
okay.
You know, I think a lot of it's just anecdotal. It's kind of it's a little premature to draw any sweeping conclusions from the rollout yet. But
yeah.
There have been glitches. That much we know. You know, there have also been reports that more than a million people have already enrolled. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I really appreciate your coming on, and I've enjoyed chatting with you. And
yeah.
I hope you'd be willing to come on in the future.
I would enjoy that immensely, Roger. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom. Have a good
All
one.
Right. You as well.
Tom Clute from Talking Points Memo. And he brought up an issue that there are large numbers of citizens who just lost their job last night. At least they've lost their paycheck for a while. And I'm a big believer in credit unions. I think that's where people ought to bank. It keeps your money close to home, and there aren't any real national credit unions. They're all community-based. In full disclosure, I am a member of Consumers Credit Union, but last night before midnight, the vice president of lending, Steve Owens at Consumers Credit Union, reassured its members who are governmental employees, either in the military or just in the public sector working for the federal government. And, well, here's a quote. "It's important that we support those who choose to serve our country on a daily basis, as members of our military or as public servants. In this time of uncertainty, we want to erase their worry as much as we possibly can." And before the government shut down, here was a case of a credit union reaching out to its members who could see this train coming down the through the tunnel, Adam, and was proactive in saying, "Call us, we'll work with you, we'll try to get through this together." And that leaves a warm spot in my heart. 322, 71 degrees. Let's check news. WKZO.com AccuWeather forecast. Clouds eventually giving way to some sunshine this afternoon. A warm front has passed through, and the gradual increase in temperatures will get us up to near 80 before the day's over. We're up to 72 already. Mainly clear and mild tonight, a low of 55. Mostly sunny and very warm for this time of year. Tomorrow, a high near 80. Yeah, Bob Larson has been telling us this was coming, folks. And Thursday, variably cloudy, warm, a couple of showers and thunderstorms in the area, and a high of 77. We got 72 out there, and in just about 15 minutes or so, we're going to talk to Bob Larson, see if there's any update to that weather forecast. Gas prices are weird. Still, the best price in the area is in St. John's, north of Lansing, and it has stuck at $3.17 a gallon there. Closer to Kalamazoo, gas price in Hastings, $3.49. $3.30 is the best price in Plainwell, the M89 strip. $3.27 at a number of stations along Gull Road, starting out in Richland and coming all the way into town. Downtown, $3.33, $3.35, $3.39 out in Portage, with the exception of Meyer, there at 3:30, just north of I-94 on Southwestnage. South, 3:41 at Meyer in Three Rivers. Sturgis, 3:22, always the low price leader. Battle Creek, on the east side of Battle Creek, 3:33. The best price, that's at 11 Mile and I-94, right there by the Fire Keepers Casino. $3.39, the best price in Pawpaw, unless you go north of town, and at M40 and M43, the price $3.37. So gas prices continue to decline, but keep your wits about you when you're out there driving around, and if you can see a bargain, fill up. Leave a couple of extra shekels in your pocket. CBS News Update is next. Tuesday afternoon, Raj Taylor driving you home. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk to Bob Larson from AccuWeather. We'll find out if there's anything going to keep us from that 80-degree high tomorrow. Now, just yesterday, he warned us that this is likely the last one. We'll find out if that's changed today. Following that, we're going to talk to Amy Harden, author of a favorite blog of mine, Democracy Tree. And yesterday, her blog was Keep Calm and Get Insured. And we'll talk to her today and find out if she still thinks there was too much ado here about something we'll live through. And she thinks that we've become addicted to crises like this, like crack addicts. And we'll talk to her and see, now that it's happened, has the sky fallen? In the 4 o'clock hour, right at the get-go, we're going to talk to Bob Fuss, CBS correspondent on Capitol Hill, and we'll find out exactly what's going on there this afternoon, if there's any sense of urgency in the halls of Congress. We'll talk to Bob Fuss at about 10 after 4. And then in the final half hour of the afternoon show here, we're going to talk to Paul Clements. He is a Democrat that has thrown his hat in the ring for the Democratic nomination for the 6th District. And we'll find out from Paul if he was the elected representative, what he would have done last night and how what he would do would be different from our current representative, Mr. Upton. All that coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, but as promised, joining us now, Bob Larson, and your prediction came true, my friend. 80 tomorrow.
Indeed, it had. Actually, Bob's off today. You got
That's right. I'm sorry. No wonder you were quiet. I was introducing the wrong guy. Who do I have with me today?
It's Frank Strait today.
Hi, Frank. How are you doing? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yep, it's been a while since I filled in for Bob.
Well, yesterday, Bob was telling us that tomorrow we were likely going to hit 80, and sure enough, in today's AccuWeather forecast, that's what's happening tomorrow. Is tomorrow the last 80-degree day of the year?
Well, there's a chance it is, but my gut feeling is that by the time you get to Saturday, we'll see another surge of warmth coming in, and that will send us back up to about 80 degrees.
Oh.
There's a chance we get to 80 on Friday as well.
Oh, well. But is this spell of warm weather, is this sort of summer's last hurrah?
Probably so for the 80-degree temperatures. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw some more warm surges that keep us in the 70s. A few more times down the road, but once we get to Saturday, I think that's probably our last chance of seeing 80 for this year.
Okay. I'm certain Bob told you that we require him to render unto us the weather word of the day.
Which is summary.
Okay. And a well-chosen word. What's going on out there?
Well, right now we have southerly winds around high pressure that's off to our east, and that's bringing in some warm air. Actually, the winds are more southwesterly and pulling in some pretty warm air that's over the central and southern plain states into the area.
Uh-huh.
Over the next couple of days, storms that are out over the northwest now move out into the plains. It actually looks like a pretty potent storm system will be setting up over the plain states by the end of the week, and that will track toward Lake Superior and into Canada from there. That pulls a front toward us. Until that front gets to us, we're going to continue to see a warm air surge again from the south. So high 70s and low 80s look to be the rule for highs until we get to at least Sunday.
This front that you're mentioning seems to be moving slower than originally thought. Are you pretty comfortable that it'll get here Saturday, or is it possible it'll drag its feet even more?
Well, it may drag its feet some, but I think that at least by late Saturday we'll have that front in the area. Our computer model guidance on that has tended to show a slower track of that front, and so it wouldn't surprise me if it ended up being a little slower, but at this point, my gut feeling is by the end of the day Saturday, we'll get wet.
Frank, NOAA is tracking a tropical depression in the Gulf. Some of the computer models show it going up, some of them in the western Gulf, a couple of them in the eastern Gulf. What's your gut tell you's going to happen there?
Well, that's what I'm thinking as well. I think it ends up tracking through the northwest Caribbean and then into the eastern Gulf of Mexico. It looks as though it's going to stay over the eastern part of the country. Whether or not it develops at all is a question. It's not currently an organized system at this point, but it has a good chance, at least even money, of becoming a depression or tropical storm on its way through the northwest Caribbean and through the Gulf of Mexico. There will be some factors that are kind of impinging upon it, like wind shear, strong upper-level winds that might tear the thunderstorms associated with this disturbance apart and keep it from developing. But either way, it looks like it's going to be a good surge of moisture as this front that will affect us Saturday pushes through the eastern part of the country. It should result in some pretty good downpours as that storm system starts to interact with the front as it moves through the eastern part of the country.
Any chance of it turning into a nor'easter for the friends along the east coast?
My gut feeling is it's going to track a little too far west for that, but it's something we'll have to keep an eye on. If that front ends up moving at just the right rate of speed, then maybe we could end up with some kind of nor'easter along the east coast. It's something to keep in mind.
Interesting. You'll be back with us again tomorrow, Frank?
No, this is a one-day thing for me.
Well, it was good talking with you.
Sure.
Have a good one, Frank.
Yep, take care.
You bet. So the warm weather is going to continue at least through Saturday. That's a good thing. 590 WKZO time is 3:45. Joining me now, Amy Harden. Amy is the author of Democracy Tree, one of my go-to blogs on a daily basis. Keep calm and get insured. I thought that was a great headline, Amy. How you doing?
I'm just fine, Roger. Thank you. Yeah, the media really seems to be raising the temperature on this, the government shutdown, which is actually just a partial shutdown. But they continually refer to it as just a blanket shutdown. And I wanted to bring the temperature down on this a little bit. I was just looking at the history of government shutdowns in our country. Since 1976, over the last 37 years, we've had 17 shutdowns, including this one now that makes 18 shutdowns, being the government being closed, so to speak, at least partially for, at the end of today, it'll be 112 days. This is not an unusual thing. Under President Ford, there was one. Reagan, 8 of them. H.W. Bush, 1, and under Clinton, 2. With President Carter taking the prize with 5, and as a one-term president, that's pretty impressive. And during his administration, during those 4 years, there was the shutdowns totaled 57 days. So the notion that the sky is falling, which is the other thing I likened it to, is pretty silly, I think, in this case. Certainly 800,000 people worried about, you know, their paychecks, federal workers, is of concern. But when I see the media interviewing people about that they can't get into federal parks and that they can't go to the Statue of Liberty and so forth as if it's a major crisis for our country, it's just not that. The media is doing a pretty poor job on this. If their goal is journalism, but their goal is viewership and ratcheting up the rhetoric on it.
Well, and to endorse your wanting to lower the color-coded basis for alarm down to something closer to green. The stock market's up 40 points today. And so Wall Street seems to agree with you that the sky hasn't fallen.
That is true. They're not terribly concerned about this. I imagine when we approach the debt ceiling debate here, I think that runs out October 17th at midnight, that they'll be much more concerned about that because that involves total disarray in our economy. The president just called today. That would be an economic shutdown as opposed to a government shutdown. And that would put the Department of Treasury in disarray and create a situation where the dollar would become a little bit shaky across the world and trust in our government and our economy could decline. And in addition to our bond rating, could take a nick on that.
Mm-hmm. And we saw what happened last time. Investors got nervous about the quality of our debt.
Mm-hmm. That is true, and that could happen. Although I'm not deeply concerned about what happens in the stock market. It's so volatile, and I think that's because of the nature of the stock market and the rapid fire of the trades, and that it's so computer driven and emotionally driven. It's very difficult for us to put our thumb on that and use that as any sort of a bellwether as to how we're going to run our government.
Mm-hmm.
That's just no. Now Chris Matthews is referring to this. I love the way he called this crisis. He called it a government by tantrum, and that harkens back to the Clinton era when those of us that can remember Newt Gingrich.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, if you recall, he was not getting his way. And at one point on Air Force One, President Clinton refused to talk to him about his economic agenda. And Gingrich was asked to use the back door of Air Force One to exit the plane. And so the media picked up on that and actually did some political cartoons and so forth about his temper tantrum, and that's why they had the government shut down back then, because Newt was in a little bit of a
snit.
Yeah, that's the word for it. Yeah.
Yes.
It's funny because he's now back on Crossfire on CNN. They've reinvented that show, brought it back from the grave, and he's editorializing on this particular shutdown.
Interesting. Last night, Rachel Maddow referred to the right-wing hostage takers in Congress as children putting gasoline in the gas or putting sugar in the gas tank of the car and setting recreational fires in all the bedrooms. And I think both she and other commentators have summed this up correctly. I appreciate your taking time to join me this afternoon. Amy, before I let you go, if people are interested in your blog, how would they find it?
They could look up democracy-tree.com, and on my blog, on my website, they can also find me on Facebook and on Twitter.
Thank you, ma'am. You have a good day.
Thank you, Roger. You too.
Amy Harden, the author of Democracy Tree. John McNeil with breaking news right after an update from the WKZO.com newsroom. Homeward Bound on a Tuesday afternoon. Raj Taylor and in from the WKZO.com newsroom, John McNeil. What's going on, John?
A couple of stories we're following this afternoon. We just talked to John Nixon. He's the head number cruncher for the state of Michigan. They just got off with a phone call. I guess they talked to all the treasurers across the land just to fill them in on what was happening in terms of the shutdown and when it was going to start impacting them. And he got some of the questions he had answered, but there are a lot of questions out there. This thing's incredibly complex, and they have no idea if they have to shut some of these programs down. And they're hoping it doesn't get to that. Some of the programs that are threatened at this point, some of the programs that are gone already, they've already lost their Bureau of Labor Statistics. The websites or the unemployment numbers and all that are down. They're gone. The parks in the state are national parks are closed. They're turning tourists away, which they figure hurts the state, of course.
Now, the only national park in Michigan is Isle Royale, and that's not a big tourist attraction. Yeah.
Well, he said that Michigan's hit a lot, not nearly as much as, say, Virginia would be or Maryland would be, where they have hundreds of thousands of federal workers. We may have a few thousand.
Yeah.
So it's not as big a deal here in terms of impacting the economy directly in terms of furloughs. But I can imagine it might hurt them over in Battle Creek quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Some of the programs, they have funding for the SNAP program through October.
Okay.
They have funding for a couple of weeks for the childhood nutrition program. That's the WIC program. School lunch program, they have a couple of weeks worth. Low-income energy assistance, a few weeks. After that, they have problems. This thing has got to get over with in the next 2 weeks, or they're going to be a lot of hungry, cold people in the state of Michigan.
Ooh.
And so
now we're talking real impact.
Now we're talking real impact.
Yeah.
And that's what they're worried about. It's a very difficult situation, and the debt ceiling comes right after this. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to get any easier. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Not really grim, but
it could get grim real fast.
Yeah, enough to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up a little bit. This isn't a cakewalk.
No.
Interesting.
And, you know, we're fortunate in that we have funding that they sent the check early for the food assistance program, the SNAP program, the bridge card.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of weeks of
food stamps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
But after a couple of weeks or a month, there's going to be a lot of pain in the state.
Oh, yeah.
The other big story I was following this afternoon, I went to the forum this afternoon for East Campus, the first public input session on what they're going to do with the building that survives there. And they haven't quite sorted out yet how much of that building they're going to be able to save. But we got some hard figures today on exactly what they need. The university last week sold $15 million worth of bonds. So they have the money in the bank now to fix the main structure.
Okay.
The central portion of East Campus, the original building.
And that's going to be alumni relations?
It's going to be an alumni center,
sort of
an alumni greeting center. It'll be used for a lot of different things. It'll be used a lot like the Fetzer Center is now.
Okay, okay.
But mainly have an alumni orientation. Some of the other things that they hope to do with it is, you know, re-landscape the whole hill, and more in the original Olmsted plan.
Okay.
They need $10 million to save each of the two wings. If they're going to save the two wings on the building, they're going to need an additional $20 million in contributions from the community
or
from the alumni.
$10 million for each wing.
Yeah.
Did they give you any idea what their plans are for those wings? Should they come up with the money?
No, they don't. They don't really have any plans for the wings at this point. The $10 million would just sort of restore the outside of them, put new heating and cooling systems into them, and then they'd figure out what to do with them later.
Thanks.
News from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.